So as I mentioned, we're in John chapter 18. We're going to pick it up in verse 39. And as we get into that, though, let's remind ourselves of where we are. I'm not going to go into much detail here, but there were three top trials with the Jews. Initially with Annas when they first brought him in, then with Caiaphas, one in the middle of the night, one the next day. They then went to Pilate, which is what we primarily talked about last week. And there's a lot of things going on here. And somebody remind us, what was the issue for Pilate? Why was he kind of in an awkward spot here?
He's a Roman.
He was wrong? Okay.
He's Roman.
Oh, he's Roman. Well, that'd make it, yeah, that would be an awkward situation. I mean, there was awkwardness between the Romans and the Jews. What did the Jews have over Pilate?
I think they would probably report him. There's been some problems in the past, and report him to headquarters, it might not be good. So.
Yeah, they had called his bluff once and backed him down, and another time they had reported him to Rome, and Rome backed him down. So they weren't too afraid of Pilate, and he was a little bit afraid of them. But so here are the Jews coming, having brought these trumped up charges with Jesus and want him executed. And they really just wanted Pilate kind of to do it because they asked him to right off. You know, what do you got against him? Well, we wouldn't be bringing him here if he wasn't evil. And then Pilate doesn't quite go for that. And they have some more discussion. And Pilate has a conversation with Jesus. Now, not in the book of John, but between verses 38 and 39, there's another trial. Because Pilate starts trying to figure out how to get out of this mess. Because here's Pilate, he's a Roman, and he's a governor. He's not unintelligent. He's there to bring some justice, some reasonableness to his governing. Or Rome would very quickly say, "You're a jerk. Get out of here." At work sometimes I've heard a guy say, "Well, I made a career-limiting decision." Meaning he chose to go against some higher up a little bit, or, you know, he had to choose between left and right. He knew that some of the people that were important wouldn't like the direction he went, but, you know, instead of Pilate saying he's making career-limiting decisions, he might actually be making life-limiting decisions, because if he's not well thought of in the Romans and they think he does poorly, I mean, it wasn't unheard of to bring him back and take his head off. So there's a certain amount of fear of Rome involved here. But so he's trying to get out of it. And so one way he tries to get out of it, Jesus is from Galilee, and here's Herod the Tetrarch from Galilee, who runs Galilean town for all of the Passover stuff. And so he sends him over to Herod from Galilee and says, oh, by the way, here's one of your subjects, and the Jews have a problem with him, so take care of it, kind of. And Herod says, no, I'm not going to get involved in this. His soldiers do rough him up a little bit and mock him in a few things. And I don't want to lighten that. I mean, that was significant. It was very degrading, very, very in a poor way for them to treat anybody, certainly the very God living in the flesh. But he sends him back to Pilate and says, you're on your own. I don't see any reason to do anything. And so we're picking it up, and we're going to use not only what's here in John, but a little bit of Mark, just to kind of give some perspective so that we can see our way through what John is bringing out to us. So with all of that said, let's read beginning in verse 39 of John 18 and continue down through 19 verse 16. So 18 verses there. And if you want to start reading that for us, that'd be great. If you want to stop somewhere along, just stop. Somebody else can pick it up. So who can read that for us?
But you have a custom that I should release one man for you at the Passover. So do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews? They cried out again, not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber. Then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him. And the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. They came up to him saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and struck him with their hands. Pilate went out again and said to them, "See, I am bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no guilt in him." So Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and a purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." When the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and according to the law, he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God." When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. He entered his headquarters again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. So Pilate said to him, "You will not speak to me? Do you not know that I have authority to release you and authority to crucify you?" Jesus answered him, "You would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given to you from above. Therefore, he who delivered me over to you has the greater sin." From then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, "If you release this man, you are not Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king opposes Caesar." So when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus and sat down on the judgment seat at a place called the Stone Pavement, and in Aramaic, Gabbatha. Now it was the day of preparation of the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. He said to the Jews, "Behold your king." They cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." So he delivered him over to them to be crucified.
Okay, so let's work our way through this. Going back up to verse 39. So here's Pilate. He's got Jesus back. And he's looking the situation over. And he's trying to figure out what path he can take that will grant him some way out of this responsibility, this thing he's been sucked into. By the Jewish leadership, they have drawn him into something that he just really doesn't want to be a part of. As we mentioned before, I mean, he was probably very much aware of everything that had gone on earlier in the week with Palm Sunday and all the people hailing Jesus and thinking well of him. So he can see through this and know that he's caught in a conflict that's about the Jews, and he doesn't want anything to do with it. He doesn't want to get in trouble with Rome. He doesn't want to be in trouble with the Jews because they have a lot of power that they've already exercised over him. So what way had he already tried to get out of this? You remember last week we talked a little bit about a couple of ways before this one that he tried to ease his way out of being in the conflict.
Well, he said, you go deal with him.
Yeah, that was the first thing he did. Well, you go deal with him. And the Jews responded with what? The Jewish leaders that were there.
They can't kill him.
Yeah, we can't kill him. Which in reality, when he said, "You go do it yourself," that probably included permission to put him to death. But they said no. And we got in the scriptures a very clear reason why that was. Because the intent was, the prophecy was, he would hang on a tree. So it wasn't going to be okay for the Jews to go stone him. That wasn't a part of God's plan. And even though they are guilty for everything they're doing, it, God is using their hatred, their bloodthirstiness, to carry out his plans. So they're guilty for their bloodthirstiness, but God's letting that be the path to take to get Jesus on the cross. And so he also had another way of sneaking his way out. What was that? Yeah, he sent him over to Herod. Maybe the guy that rules over the area that this guy has his normal residence in will take care of this for me. That didn't work. So now he's got him back. And he continues down the same path. Go over for a minute to Mark chapter 15. We're going to read verses 6 through 11. And we're going to come back to this a little later for a different reason. But For now, just 6 through 11. Who can read that for us?
Now at the feast he used to release for them any one prisoner whom they requested. And the man named Barabbas had been imprisoned with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the insurrection. And the multitude went up and began asking him to do as he had been accustomed to do for them. And Pilate answered them, saying, "Do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews?" For he was aware that the chief priests had delivered him up because of envy. But the chief priests stirred up the multitude too to ask him to release Barabbas for them instead.
Okay, Mark gives us some really important facts that I think help set a good stage for John. And remember, you know, Mark was written much earlier than the Gospel of John, so many people probably had this context. Might have been part of why John didn't repeat it here, but nonetheless, who's prompting Pilate for releasing a prisoner? The multitude. So we now know that out in this praetorium area, remember what's going on this week? Passover. Millions of extra, probably over 2 million extra people. No, I said that wrong. The city has probably swelled to a total population of over 2 million. So there's a lot of people here. Where's the center of attention? The temple. We're in an area just adjacent to the temple where the palace that Herod had built for himself, the original Herod the Great, that now Pilate has taken up a vacation residence or a secondary residence in. And so the Jewish crowds probably gathered around out there. I mean, nobody was inclined to stay home and watch all the issues on the TV. You know, if you want to know what's going on the Passover, obviously in that area, you've got to go out there and see it. If you don't just want somebody's verbal explanations later. And we're leading up to the big events of the week. In this case, the truly big events, because Jesus is going to die on the cross. But in their eyes, from the Jewish perspective, you know, things are really continue to heat up through the week. And so we're at a key day. And the main Passover celebration is about to begin, starting at midnight that night. So the crowds have begun to show up, and they're talking about, "Hey, what about this tradition that you started, Pilate? What are you going to do?" And so Pilate has this great epiphany. Here's Barabbas, which John says was a robber. What do they say about Barabbas over in Mark? Murderer. He's a murderer. What else? Insurrectionist. So here is this guy that was rebellious, which in some senses the Jews might have liked, because they would like to see the Romans get kicked out. At the same time, faded insurrectionism can get a lot of people killed. I mean, massacres in response to insurrection were fairly common in Rome, in Roman government governing in Jerusalem, in Palestine. And so who knows? We really don't know, but he certainly had a poor reputation. He was an insurrectionist, a robber. What that probably meant was a highwayman, fairly common in that area. There's a road that goes down to Jericho, I believe it is. It's kind of a downhill road, and they would hide in the valley and often killed and robbed people that were traveling there. And that's kind of the term that's used here, is the term they often used for those folks. A lot of business travel was done on that road. But we don't really know the history of what Barabbas in particular had done. So Pilate gets this brilliant idea. Instead of just letting them pick one this time, he says, "Well, okay, you want Barabbas? Or how about this Jesus guy that claims to be king of the Jews?" Now, that's the way he says it. He says, "Or do you want your king?" And so, what's the response? Go back over to John.
Well, the Jewish institutes, the religious authorities, encourage Barabbas.
Yes. "Do you wish then that I release for you the king of the Jews?" And what's Pilate expecting them to say? What does he expect for the answer to this? Jesus. You know, here's this scum of the earth guy. He can have him and have him free and have him out running around with y'all. Or you can have Jesus. And he's got this crowd here. Was Jesus popular with the crowds?
Yesterday.
You see what Pilate is doing? He's not getting anywhere with these Jewish leaders. You know, he had offered to them, well, you go take care of it, thinking they probably even like the power, because that lets them feel like they're really in charge of you. No, no, they didn't want that. They wanted Pilate to crucify him. And so now he's got the crowd up there, and he goes, oh, this guy's popular with the crowd. This is a slam dunk. I want free from this. I'll just offer him up. The crowd will be here. They'll scream they want Jesus. Then I can look at the Jewish leaders and say, hey, you know, your people wanted him. Don't blame me. Well, this is what happened, because the Jewish leaders said, no, not this man, but Barabbas. It's a lot of symbolism going on here. I mean, the actions that these Jewish leaders are leading their people into, it's bloodthirsty, it's wrong, it's evil. Despite the fact that God's using it as his mechanism to put Jesus on the cross, they're given a pretty clear choice. It almost reminds me of when Joshua is talking to the people when they're starting their time of occupying the promised land. He says, you know, you can follow God or you can choose death. Life or death, it's your choice. Me and my family, we're going in the life direction. There's a little bit of similarity here. What do you want? You want the scum of the earth? Or do you want this Jesus? This one that claims to be king. Now, admittedly, Pilate had no clue at this point what he was really saying. But the people, the Jewish leaders, had to know they had purchased Jesus' betrayal with money. They had to know their charges were trumped up. They had to know that this was about their power, about what they wanted for themselves, what didn't have anything to do with righteousness or holiness. And so they said, you know, we'll take the robber. We'll take evil. And so here they had him released. So what does Pilate do with Jesus starting there in chapter 19?
Has him flogged, scourged.
Has him scourged. Uh-huh. And, you know, there's not a lot of discussion here. It's clear by the time we get done and read the events that Pilate's on another alternative path again. But he has him scourged, and he kind of turns him over to the guards for the typical treatment of prisoners that they don't have much respect for. And so they scourged him. And it's a real simple statement, but we ought to talk about that for just a minute, just to be clear. Were you going to say something, Ted?
No, that's all right. I was going to say, too. We don't want to just...
No, because this is significant. The scourge was an instrument that had a wooden handle, if you will, that was wrapped in leather, and then had strips of leather coming off of it. At the end of those strips would be sharpened things, stones, metals, glass, and typically... a scourging was 40 lashes with that. And there's no way you can be overly graphic with this. And I don't want to be overly graphic or underly graphic. I want us to understand what happened here. It was not at all uncommon in the beating. And the beating occurred in a couple of ways normally. One might be with hands high overhead, strapped up against a pole. Another one might be stretched out above the ground, but not touching the ground, I found out as I was preparing. Then the man was beaten on the back with this whip that is a drag across that would take out chunks of flesh. And it was not uncommon, using the kindest words, to lay open major blood pathways, vessels and veins. It also is not uncommon for disembowelment even to occur from the backside. So this is tremendous. Death was not abnormal. What didn't always occur, it didn't occur in Jesus' case. So he had him scourged. Tremendous punishment. And we often think of Jesus suffering on the cross for our sins and paying the price there, but really the price started right here. Go over to Isaiah chapter 53, verses 4 through 6. Not, they're going to be very familiar words to you, Words worth seeing again nonetheless. Isaiah 53, 4 through 6. By the way, we could read all of chapter 3. I'm limiting to these few verses just to be a little bit time conscious as I work through our lesson today. But who's got 53, 4 through 6?
Surely he hath borne our infirmities and carried our sorrows. Yet we did judge him as plagued and smitten of God and humbled. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was broken for our iniquities. And the chastisement of our peace was upon him. And with his stripes are we healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone from to his own way. And the Lord hath laid upon him the iniquity of us all.
Yeah, when Don read that, go back to verse 5 a little bit. That's really the centerpiece to tie it in with what we're talking about here. The last half of that, that's King James, isn't it, Don?
Yeah.
It says, and by his stripes we are healed. Who has another version? Different word. Yeah, New American Standard or something else. Is there another word that's used?
By his wounds.
By his wounds? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the New American Standard and the King James are the ones I looked at in preparation. Because it's a real common phrase, by his stripes we're healed. The stripes are those, with every one of those lashes, it would take a strip out of the back and create a stripe, if you will. And that's what this talking about. New American Standard just goes ahead and calls it scourging. Wounding is another term that's out there. So what Jesus is experiencing, we're told in Isaiah, is for a purpose. First of all, who did it please to do this? God. This is a part of God's plan for our redemption. It's a little hard to get your head around that, isn't it? But God was pleased. If I could just use some fair substitution here. God was pleased that he himself as God could suffer and be punished instead of having to punish us. Because his intent and purpose was to redeem men that would believe in him. And so as he does that, he's pleased to accomplish this. It was really the only path that, I don't know if I want to say it's the only path he had, that's why I started to say, I don't know if that's accurate. It's the only path he chose, it's what he was going to do, and it pleased himself to accomplish that. But as we look, the scourging is particularly picked up, and even in verse 6, it goes on to say, but the Lord caused the iniquitous all to fall on him. That suffering, even starting with the scourging, was a part of his suffering for our sins. So it's easy to talk about hanging on the cross, but we have to back up. If we want to talk about Jesus' physical suffering and say, no, it started, you could even say, if you want to, it started when he humbled himself and came to earth and gave up his heavenly glory to be here and live as a man. I mean, that was suffering. That's certain. But the real physical, in the body suffering starts here with this scourging. So he took our sin and suffered. So they're not done. It's after the scourging. So here is Jesus obviously going to be bleeding, possibly very profusely. And the soldiers go on. What do they do in verse 19:2? Describe what happens here, somebody. Put it in your words.
They
twist up a crown of thorns and put on his head. What else?
Put
a purple robe. Do you suppose this was truly a grand robe? No. And I'll tell you why we know that. I say no. Why it's extremely probable that that's the case in a moment. What else? They say it in John. Put a scepter in his hand, don't they? They don't talk about that here. And so they've got him all dressed up. And so now he's probably seated on something. All dressed up. Maybe standing. Doubt it. But he's got this purple robe on, and what do?
Just making a mockery of him.
They make a mockery of him. And we know from history, this was a normal thing to do. The Roman guards would be given prisoners to play games with, if you want to put it that way, to just to mess with them, just for their own entertainment. They would do this, particularly people that were involved with uprisings and so on, but also, frankly, in what I read, if they had somebody who was just, and I don't mean this word in a wrong way, but in a degrading way, but somebody who was an imbecile, somebody who was very simple-minded, that just wasn't able to function in the normal world socially and in the business world, somebody who was quite backward, they would do this kind of thing just to make fun of them. And they kept around an old robe typically for this kind of thing, so it was probably dirty. And even the robe itself was probably a mockery. And so here they are, and they slap his face and do all these things. And they keep saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." So this took a little while. I mean, this wasn't a 5-minute evolution in Jesus' life and in this day. So it took a little while. And when they're all done with this scourging and mocking and all that, Pilate came out again and said to them, who's them? Well, chief priests, probably the Jewish crowd, because at this point they've had the crowd saying they wanted Barabbas instead of Jesus. And he says, behold, I'm bringing him out to you so that you may know I find no guilt in him. How would you like to have lived in this time? This is how they treated people they don't have to find any guilt in? It kind of shows you how the politics work, didn't it? So I'm bringing him out, let you know I found no guilt in him. So Jesus then came out. He still got on the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate said to them, behold the man. See who he is? Look at him. That's kind of what he's saying. And so when the chief priests and officers saw him, they cried out saying what? Crucify him. Now Pilate has a response to that. But before we get to Pilate's response, why do you suppose he had him beaten and brought out this way?
Probably hoping that would appease them.
Yeah, he's trying to appease them. I don't find him guilty, but just to make you happy, look what I've done to him, kind of a thing. It's in the background, he doesn't say it, but he's probably thinking he's going to see sympathy. Jesus was probably a very disturbing sight at this point. I mean, what he had gone through and the condition that he was probably in was probably the kind of thing you would turn your head from. And so he's probably thinking this is going to make them rethink and back off and say, okay, fair enough, it's over. But instead he gets this answer of crucify. And so then he says something to them. What does he tell them?
You do it.
You do it. You want him crucified? You go crucify him. And so take yourselves and crucify him. I find no guilt. The Jews have a quick answer. And that law says that by the law, he ought to die because he made himself out to be the Son of God. What's Pilate's response to that statement? Fear. He was even what?
More afraid.
John is revealing to us that Pilate has been working out of fear all the way through this. And we knew that from the background that we looked into. He's afraid of the Romans. He's afraid of the Jews. He's afraid of the people because Jesus is popular. And he's got all these things going to go like, let me out of this. And he's working his way through it. His last attempt was the scourging of Jesus. That didn't work. And one of the guys that I read said he should have known better if he'd known anything about a predatory animal. When a predatory animal sees an animal that they've been chasing and going after wounded, do they back off at that point? No. It's time to lunge in for the kill. And these Jews are predatory with regard to Christ. They're bloodthirsty. So they see some blood, they want his life for sure. And so Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid. Why else might Pilate be afraid here? What in the statement might make Pilate more afraid? I should ask it. I'm assuming we talked about one of those two and I haven't yet. There's two issues that may be at play here.
Well, I think he's heard the stories of Jesus, so he may start believing, well, maybe this is the Son of God.
Well, that's one piece of it. As a matter of fact, if you go into Roman mythology, who's a Roman mythological gods? Name one or two. Zeus. Yeah, the Romans had a tendency to kind of imagine, and I think that's a fair way of putting it, that people around them might be those gods at time or two. It happened. It even happened to Paul at one point. He was with Barnabas. I'm pulling this out of memory. I'll get it off a little bit. But they attributed them Roman mythological god. That's who you are. And, you know, Paul had to, no, stop. It's not who we are. But so they had a tendency to kind of see the presence of deities in people. That's one reason why they didn't have a big, difficult time convincing themselves that it was okay for Caesar to claim to be God. So they worshiped Caesar as God. So here they are, kind of had that tendency. And that's further reinforced because where does he go from here? He goes in to talk to Jesus. Where are you from? And so we'll get into that in a minute. What's the other thing in this statement that could be very scary to him? Do you remember what I told you last time about Pilate's first encounter? Well, actually, the two encounters that we talked about last time where the Jews backed him down. Remember what was going on in the first one where he said, he got them all in a room and said, I'm going to kill you all if you don't back off. And they said, fine, kill us. And he backed off because he couldn't afford to have this massacre be one of his first events in Palestine. You remember what he was doing? What was the issue?
Just the bust, wasn't it?
They were bringing in, they had these standards that had the bust of Tiberius, who was at that time Caesar, on, and they were worshiping him like he was a god. And so the Jews said, hey, we don't put up with that around here. And they were really causing problems and rioting. And that was his answer, was he got in a room, threatened to kill them all, and they said, okay, fine. And so that backed him off. What was the other time that he got backed off? He did have busts in his home. He took the standard bearers down, so that kind of was appeased, and on they went. But when he set up his secondary home in what was originally Herod the Great's palace, he put these busts up. And so when the Jews did their official business and saw this, they just wrote to Rome and said, this guy just keeps flaunting these gods in our face, and it's offensive to us. If you don't want to riot, you better do something about it. Rome then sent back to Pilate and said, get them out of your residence. So now what are they bringing back up? Here's a man that claims to be a god. Be the Son of God. Our law requires that he die for that. You see, it's parallel right along with the two issues that they've already backed him down off, and there were others. We brought those two out as highlights. So here he is going, oh, not this again. So, you know, they're playing their trump card here with him. And so when Pilate heard this in verse 8, he was even more afraid. He went into the praetorium again. This is where Jesus is at, and said, where are you from? What do you think he meant by that? Was he asking, are you from Galilee? No, he already knew he was from Galilee because that was his excuse to send him over to Herod, the Tetrarch. So, where are you from? And what did Jesus say? He was quiet. So then Pilate, I can just imagine him strutting around even as he did this. You don't speak to me? You don't know that I have authority to release you and have authority to crucify you? You know, I'm big stuff. What does Pilate say? Or what does Jesus say? You don't have any authority unless I give it to you. Or given to you from above. For this reason, he who delivered me to you has a greater sin. So he's talking about the Jews being more under judgment for what's going on. You know, this is fascinating. If you really look at it, why did the Jews want to get Jesus dead and out of the way? What was their potential emotions here? What was driving them? And I would say, well, you could say hatred, you could say a lot of things, but they were fearful. They were fearful of what Jesus was doing and what he was becoming. They didn't like it. They were afraid. And here's Pilate. We know what his emotion is. He's working out of fear. So you got the Jews, you got Pilate, you got Jesus. The Jews are afraid. Pilate's afraid. The one they're trying to crucify is the one who doesn't have any fear in this. And so here's Jesus without any fear saying, you don't have any power unless it comes from above. And brings up this issue of sin. And by the way, if you go over and read what the well, we'll see that later if we can get to it today. So let's just keep going. And so, what was the result of this? Verse 12. How did Pilate respond when Jesus said this?
He tried to release him again.
He made efforts to release him, but the Jews cried out. And what did the Jews say to Pilate? Yeah, there you go. Okay. Is there a threat in this?
Yeah.
You turn him loose, we're telling. We're going to tattletale on this to Caesar. Because he says he's a king, that means he's opposing Caesar. Now, this is a strange deal. Do the Jews want Caesar to be king? No. They have promoted every insurrection that they thought would work. They tried to shy away from some because they didn't want it to fail and then have to suffer for it. But they wanted them out. What were they looking for in a Messiah? What was the main thing they wanted him to do?
Get rid of the Romans.
Get rid of the Romans. So here they are. So you think this was a sincere comment? Well, they just pointing out to them that we're going to use this against them. So when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out. He sat down in the judgment seat in a place called the pavement, but in Hebrew is Gabbatha. It was a day of preparation for the Passover. It was about the sixth hour, so in the middle of the day. And he said to the Jews, "Behold your king." And they have another answer. Said, "Away with him, crucify him." So Pilate turns back to them again. "Shall I crucify your king?" And the chief priest answered, "We have no king but Caesar." Isn't that phenomenal?
What a blasphemous statement. You know, it's all, they went to becoming, supposedly, leaders, religious leaders, to become political, to get with their
whatever it takes.
Even willing the blasphemous to do it.
It's man against God, because if you, even today, if you talk to even church people, the most sacred thing to a lot of church people is their free will, that they're in charge.
Yeah.
And the idea that, you know, as Shakespeare said, all the world is a stage, you know, that idea is so frightening to man that he is not in charge, that God is in charge. And these people are just fighting that tooth and nail.
Fighting a tooth and nail. And they're willing to give allegiance to the very power that they're looking for a Messiah to relieve them from. So was this made in good faith? I mean, is this an honest statement or is it a hypocritical statement? It's a very hypocritical statement, isn't it? But in reality, it's the truth. They said it in hypocrisy, but in reality, they have given their souls to Caesar, who claims to be a god. I mean, look at what they're saying. They're saying this man, Jesus, deserves to die because he claims to be the Son of God. Our only king is Caesar, who claims to be God. They have taken this most illogical and insane route, because they know Caesar's not truly God. Anybody that promotes themselves as being a god when they're not, they're an instrument of who? Satan. They are voicing, even though it's hypocritical, it turns out to be true. They are voicing, we will make an allegiance, we will proclaim our, the word escapes me, being subject to, our allegiance to, that's the word I was looking for, a representative of Satan, if you will. a man who claims to be God who clearly is not. We will do that. We will voice that in order to put you in a corner so that you have to crucify this man Jesus that we brought to you. See that? So, what avenues does Pilate have left? If you're looking at Pilate's life and situation, Pilate's just like all of us. He's got a soul and he's got a neck. And, you know, we don't know what went on in Pilate's mind about his soul, about the rightness, about being willing to stand and say, this is so wrong, if I lose my position with Rome, I'm willing to do it. We don't know if any of those thoughts occurred, because we're not given insight into Pilate's life. But certainly his position was on the line, maybe his life was on the line. He knew if he got in a conflict with Caesar and he offended Tiberius Caesar, while Tiberius wasn't like Nero, who was extremely quick to kill people, it still was not unheard of. And so if you want to look at it this way, to put it in the dramatic, it was his neck or his soul. And what did he look out for? Well, if he wants to save his political future, he had one choice. And so we see it here in the end of verse 16, so he then handed him over to them to be crucified. Historically, who have we blamed? Who have we said is at fault for the crucifixion of the Messiah? The Jews. And Jesus made it clear that they, in handing him over, had the greater guilt. But we ought not fail to recognize here this morning that while they had the greater guilt, if you really want to look at it, he came to his own, and his own received him not. But when it came time to put him to death, it wasn't a Jewish death. Not by itself. They may have had the greater guilt for forcing this thing through and even in other places, we can clearly see them say, we'll take responsibility for us and our children. As a matter of fact, if we were to go back over to Mark chapter 15, we won't, but I'll just tell you that if we were to keep reading where we left off, we would see that the Jewish leaders, why did the people not help Pilate out? Because he went to the people and tried to move away from the leaders and get the people involved. It's because the Jewish leaders were there inciting them and telling them what to say and leading them into that response. And before they're done, they're even going to say, let the guilt for this be on us and our children and our children's children. They wanted the credit, the blame, if you will, for Jesus' death. So there's a certain element of that. There's a certain element of Jewish persecution that goes on because of that. That's part of the justification that some groups use for persecuting Jewish people, which I think obviously we're not going to condone. But nonetheless, let's recognize that when Jesus died for the sins of the whole world, the Romans didn't help him a bit. The Romans, our Gentile representatives involved in this story, the non-Jews in this story, were manipulated right into performing it. And it wasn't Jews that were mocking him when he was scourged. It wasn't Jews that were mistreating him under Herod. And it wasn't Jews that then had him drag his cross up to the hill, area of the three skulls, or area of the skull, where the three crosses were, and nailed him to the tree and crucified him. It wasn't the Jews that poked the sword in his side. We from the Gentile heritage have just as much physical complicity, at least, if not an intention, in seeing Jesus crucified. And so we're at the point now where the trials are over, and next time we'll pick it up in verse 17 and we'll see Jesus bearing his cross out to suffer and die. Don?
Well, if you look at Ephesians 2, basically it says there are two peoples, I guess you would say, on earth. There were the called out of God and then the Gentiles, or whoever you want to, the unsaved. So in fact, the Jews here are basically Gentiles spiritually. So.
Yeah. Yeah, if you go read Romans 9,
Yeah.
Not all who are Jews are Jews. And there's some discussion there where Paul distinguishes between the faithful Jews and the rest of them that just happen to be offspring of Abraham.
Or the Old Testament, there's a lot of places where God said that he didn't pick the Jews because they were such a special people, because they were just representative of all that.
As a matter of fact, he picked them because they were the least.
Yeah.
He created a race out of one man and his wife, so that no one could say he was a great people on their own right, but on what God did. Other comments this morning?
What was he asked that last question where he says, where are you from?
What's that?
When he asked that last question, where are you from? I think he was trying one last attempt, because if Jesus did not claim to be from heaven or the kingdom of Jews, he could release him. You know, he said, hey, he didn't claim to be here.
Yeah, let's not forget. We'll never know, and there really wasn't a possibility for another path than what happened here, but we don't know what Pilate's intentions were if Jesus, you know, based on his answer. But he certainly wanted to know, you know, if you think about it, if Jesus really was a God, he just was responsible for ordering the flogging of a God. Even though he may not understand God in the same way we do, that put him in a pretty frightening situation. And why was Jesus silent? Well, obviously, it was part of his plan, but also, don't forget, it was prophesied that he would be silent as a sheep is silent before its shearers.
Can you just comment on when he washes his hands before the crowd and says, well, I am innocent of this just man's blood?
Well, we can talk about that. It's not a part of what John brought up. John's showing the deity of Christ. So we get all the things here that show us Christ being the one really in control of this whole situation. But going over to other passages talk about that. And here's Pilate, he's got a problem. And it was another way that Pilate tried to, he couldn't change the events. That's what he tried to do. He constantly tried to get Jesus in a different path than to the cross. He couldn't change events, so that was his way of trying to say, it's not my fault. In other words, I know it's wrong, but it's not my fault. And you know, he was politically the most powerful man in the situation by position. The Jews obviously had more political power because they backed him down and they knew how to control him in that position. But by position, he couldn't say that. By position, if he'd told Rome, hey, it wasn't my fault, I washed my hands, and they go, you what? You were in charge, buddy. So, I mean, it's not meaningless, because it shows Pilate knew that Jesus was innocent and didn't deserve this. But on the other hand, it's meaningless in terms of Pilate was trying to clear away his guilt. And don't we all do that? Particularly not as Christians, but even as Christians at times, we get confused about how our guilt's taken care of. Jesus is going to the cross to take care of our guilt. But we find all these other ways to justify it. We compare ourselves with others. We find fault with others. We do some thing that we think is particularly sacrificial or good or extra or special in order to say, see, we're really pretty good. And none of us are really pretty good. In the eyes of God, we have nothing to bring to the table. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And that's where we are. We're only good as if God looks at us and sees Christ because of his substitutionary death on the cross and our faith in him as our Savior. So Pilate's just doing what the world constantly tries to do, and that's get rid of its guilt through psychology, through go down the list of things that the people do to get rid of guilt. That's what Pilate's doing. Not going to hold me responsible for this. I wash my hands of it. Does that answer your question? Other questions, comments? All right, let's close with a word of prayer. Lord, what you endured is beyond my comprehension. Lord, I would never willingly want to see the actual results of somebody being scourged, let alone endure it myself. And yet, I deserve the wrath of God because of my sin. But you paid that price for me, and we saw a piece of it today. Lord, we're also seeing how you are in charge. And we're seeing how men, when left to their own devices, just do silly things. Things that are easy to see through and make no sense. We see men sell their souls in this story. Maybe not literally, because their souls were already belong to Satan. Certainly didn't belong to you, but we see men take actions and give allegiance to things that when they were, that are just so illogical and foolish. Lord, keep it in front of our minds that we must take a position in life, that we are not to be like Pilate nor the Jews and either try to manipulate things or try to disavow things so that we're not responsible. But Lord, let us constantly throughout our lives pay the price for standing for the truth, and we know that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. So, Lord, we pray that you would put it in our hearts to always be ready to give an account for the faith that lies within us and for the truth of who Jesus Christ is, that he didn't just claim to be the Son of God, but you are the Son of God. And it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.